Hi everyone, my name is Ben, and welcome to Headcanon, the podcast dedicated to exploring the vast reaches of cinematic universes that never were and never shall be. Every week on this podcast, I select a movie at random from a carefully curated list of some of the weirdest and most obscure movies I've never seen, I watch and review it, and then I try to imagine what it would be like if I was given the opportunity to expand it into a soulless, cash-grab multimedia franchise. I pitch sequels, prequels, spin-offs, crossovers, gritty reboots, TV shows, video games, and even porn parodies, taking movies that never got the attention they deserved and giving them far more attention than they deserve. Welcome back. This is episode 26, I think. It's well into season 3, that thing that only I care about but keep mentioning nonetheless. And today's episode, it's probably going to be the shortest intro I ever record because I know next to nothing about the movie I'm about to watch. It's a movie called Exterminator City. I picked the random category this week was modern film, which means any movie past the year 2000. And it's something I did because I wanted to make sure there were some movies that were more recent because, you know, most of my movies are going to be cult films from, like, the 70s, 80s, and 90s. It's also why I have the classic category, which is everything before 1970, so that I have some older movies as well. But this was my modern category, and the random movie I picked was Exterminator City from 2005. And this is a movie I picked up purely on the strength of the poster, and it was like this kind of metal metallic skull looking thing, looks like the Terminator without his skin, and I just assumed it was a Terminator mockbuster of some sort because it's called Exterminator, and that was enough for me. This is something that I do maybe a little more than I care to admit or that I'm proud of. Actually, a lot of the movies on my list are just, I thought the poster looked cool, so I picked it up, and this is one of those. And I looked up some screenshots, and they look fucking bonkers. It looks like a bunch of robot puppets, and there were some naked ladies, so I don't know what I'm getting into. This could be softcore porn. I always say I try to go into these movies with as little information as possible so that I'm unspoiled and I can be surprised. I'm looking for hidden gems, and for me, the best way to do that is to not have any expectations and to kind of go in blind. So that's what I'm doing here, Exterminator City. Like I said, I don't really have a lot to talk about, and that's the other thing. It's written and directed by a guy named Clive Cohen, and he hasn't done anything else, so I don't have anything to sort of fill this time with. Usually I talk about the other movies that are on my list from the director or the writer. In this case, I don't have any of those, so I'm gonna stop trying to vamp. I'm gonna stop trying to fill time. I'm just gonna pause it right here. Oh, actually, I should also mention that. I don't know that I am going to have a trailer for this film. Usually I put the audio from the trailer in between here, but when I looked up the trailer, all I could find was a clip of two fucking crazy-ass looking robot puppets talking about, like, the philosophy of a serial killer or something. It makes me want to watch the movie even more than even maybe a trailer might have. This movie, like, maybe I do have some expectations. I'm getting more and more excited about this as I talk about it. But anyway, I'm going to pause it here. I'm going to watch the movie, and then I'm going to come back and tell y'all what I think.
I am Death, the Destroyer of Worlds. You know Nietzsche. I read the comic book. Do you mock me, Doctor? Never. I could crush your skull in one hand. How primitive. You forget your place. I wouldn't expect you to understand. Enlighten me. You're bearing witness to synthetic evolution. You're getting off on this, ain't ya? Can't you see what he is? He's a fucking lunatic. He's the beginning and the end. The Alpha and the Omega. Do you read that in the comic book? We're machines. We're here to clean up the mess. What's made if not a machine-made flesh? Oh, shit. The divide is closing, Detective. Is this what you want? For us to be like them? It's the human imperative. Kill or be killed. To attain superiority over the species. You're not here to help me catch him, are you? He's worth taking the show, baby. It was a mistake to have antagonized him like that. Hey, I'm just doing my bit for evolution. Secretly, you too envy his freedom of expression. Freedom of expression? Hell's there some freedom of expression? When I find a little tin man, I'm gonna put the fear of God into him. Now get the fuck out of here. What an asshole.
And I'm back, and I've watched Exterminator City from 2005, written and directed by Clive Cohen, and I feel like I can safely say unequivocally, without any sort of caveats, that this is officially the weirdest fucking movie I've watched for this podcast yet. This is weirder than Funny Man, the weird British killer jester movie. This is weirder than The Manitou, the Tony Curtis movie about the little person Indian mystic that comes out of a woman's back. It's weirder than Robin and the Dreamweavers, which had it was an animated movie that looked like it was made for kids, but it had the personification of porn in it as a sexy dominatrix. This is weirder than Cyber Ninja, which was basically just like an episode of Power Rangers as a movie. It's weirder than the Tetsuo movies, and that had a giant metal drill dick in it. It's weirder than all of those put together, and by a mile. This, I don't... If I get a movie weirder than this that I don't like specifically seek out for its weirdness, I will be surprised. I will be surprised if I am ever this surprised with how weird a movie is going forward on Headcanon. And I think what I'm most surprised by now that I'm kind of thinking it over and I'm about to talk about it is I'm surprised that my position on it, my feelings about what I thought about it personally, whether I would recommend it, who I would recommend it to. Usually when I get a movie this weird, or rather close to this weird, like I said, there's nothing as weird as this, I'm conflicted. I'm like, should I recommend it or did I even like it? Yeah, they're usually mixed bags. I'm usually either like liking a lot of it, hating a lot of it, and trying to kind of juggle which one out. And this one I know very clearly what I think and what I feel and what I'm gonna say. And spoilers, I liked this movie, and I also hated this movie. This is, like, one of the best movies I've ever watched for this podcast, and one of the worst movies I've ever watched for this podcast simultaneously. And I know this sounds like I said I wasn't conflicted, but I'm being very sort of, cheekily contradictory about it. But that's the movie in a nutshell. I would recommend that you see it, and also that you never see it. I mean, I sound like an asshole. But, the reason I'm ultimately saying that I loved it... Okay. I don't even know where to start, but it's what art does best. It made me feel all sorts of things. It made me think all sorts of things, not all of them good. And it took me on a roller coaster ride of emotions and psychology, and not even always on purpose or by design. Some of it was where it failed. It still took me to strange places that I'm ultimately really appreciative of. This movie is an experience that I feel like everybody should experience if they want to say that they love movies. And I'm going to say this also right now. Most of the people that are going to watch this movie are going to hate it, and they have every reason to. I'm not going to consider that an invalid position by any means. On one very real level, this movie is an abject lesson in how not to make movies. But on an even deeper level, a more primal artistic level, it's an expression of what all movies should be, and that's where I'm at. That's the contradiction that I'm grappling with here as I think about Exterminator City and what I want to say about it. I guess I should probably just start with the opening credits, which I mentioned. I saw some screenshots and there were some boobs. And usually when I see nudity in the Google screenshots of them, like when I search for the movie in the images, I get a bunch of screenshots. And if I see nudity, that's telling, because if there weren't enough other things in the movie where there, like, nudity wasn't something that would readily come up in Google, then I'm like, is that, how much of that is in the movie? And I don't have a problem with nudity. I sound like a prude when I talk about sex and nudity in movies. And it's just because, as an amateur filmmaker, and I stress amateur there, I feel like if you're going to include nudity or sexual situations, they have to mean something. They have to be justified. Because I always think of the actors that are going to play them, play these parts, and we make short films, me and my friends, and we want to make a feature someday, but like there are short films that are made in the Columbus area where we live where they actually do get actresses to do nude scenes, but it's almost never been, at least thinking it off the top of my head, I can't think of one where I was like, oh, that mattered enough that yeah, he should have asked that actress to be nude, because that's a big thing to do. And you know, that I feel like you need to justify that in the script, and so many don't. And so when I watch these movies and I see nudity just for its own sake, or more often than not just to sort of secure funding, where it's like, you know, oh well, we have this famous actress that's going nude in this movie, or just we have a sex scene because that appealed to some market, it always depresses me. And I'll get back to the opening credits here in a second, but I feel like the use of nudity in Exterminator City is the most crass, and also the most justified. Well, the most crass in terms of how it's applied in narrative terms, but the most justified in how it's applied in practical terms, if that makes any sense. I'll just have to explain it. It's all porn stars. And it's porn stars who are literally just there to be nude and then die in a slasher movie fashion. And that sounds like the most shallow thing in the world. That sounds like this is a criticism I should be making about this movie. But it's going to be hard to really explain until I get into greater context. But I'm watching the opening credits of this movie, and it's all female names. And I didn't necessarily think much of that for a couple seconds, but then as I'm reading the names, like it's Lana Cox was one of the names, and then Mistress Persephone, and then Fembomb, and I'm like, what the hell is this? These sound like porn star names. And then there are a couple porn stars that I recognize, like Taylor Wayne and Sarah J. And I'm like, okay, is this a softcore porn? Is this what I'm watching? And because I legitimately don't want to go that route with these movies. I don't want to actually watch, like, straight up porno. Like, there's a movie called Droid that I got a while ago, and I was gonna do it for the podcast, but then I watched it, and it's basically, I think it was actually a hardcore porn that they cut down into a softcore porn, and it's got like sci-fi elements in it, and that's what appealed to me. But I didn't realize the subject matter otherwise, and I'm not gonna do that, because it's like, I'm gonna sit here and relay the quality of actual porn scenes? No. But this isn't that. It's not softcore porn, but that was my thinking as I'm seeing these names go by. And what it turns out to be is, like I said, it's kind of a slasher movie. It's, well, I'll just describe it. It's a Seven-esque kind of cop thriller where a cop is hunting a serial killer. Well, it's a cop and the escaped serial killer's psychiatrist are hunting him as he's murdering his various victims. And he's like a religious, obsessed serial killer. The twist, of course, is they're all robots. It is a world where robots and humans live together. It's a dystopian future world. I don't even really know if it's dystopian. They don't really go much into the world building. I say they. This is written and directed and produced by the same guy, and I have the feeling he was the only other guy other than him and the porn stars. I think he ran all the puppets. I think he probably did all the voices. But okay, but that's a separate thing. I'll get to that. But anyway, the scenes with the porn stars, there are all the scenes where the robot killer, the exterminator of the title, is killing his victims. And it's a weird kind of filmmaking technique. Well, and it's not weird. I mean, it's obvious why he's doing it, and it's a budget constraint. But it's at the same time, I don't really understand the efficacy of it as opposed to what I would think the natural thing would do. But again, I'm trying to be vague to dance around it. He gets these porn stars, and they're all, they're all naked. I don't think any of them don't go naked. Some of them start out clothed and take off their clothes. Some of them start out naked. And they all have very, very large breasts, except for one that I noticed was flat-chested. They all have, like, implants, which I don't know if maybe that was just a function of porn at the time. I mean, I guess porn stars still have implants, but I feel like we've kind of gone away from, like, the 90s where, like, everybody had implants. But maybe it was just, you know, a lot of those actresses came from that mode. Because, you know, 2005, it was still maybe in that era. But anyway, these actresses, and they're lounging around what I'm almost certain is their own houses, and they're filmed in somewhat grainy what would have been commercial filmmaking equipment at the time, which now, you know, you can film in HD, you can even shoot in 4K with consumer grade stuff, but back in the day it looks home movie-ish. And they're just maybe sitting around their bedroom or living room or something, or bathroom. There's actually one scene where a lady's just taking a piss. And then they look usually directly at the camera, and then you see that it's POV. And I feel like the grainy quality of it is justified by that. And a lot of times they will put an actual filter over it to explicitly say it's POV. And then they'll scream, and then they'll die. But they don't die on screen. You never see, like, the knife go into one of their bodies or the killing implements. And they use a bunch of different weapons. The kills are they're varied in one sense and they're very repetitive in another. But basically, they'll look and they'll scream, and then the killer will be there, but on a completely different set, and it's obviously a different set. And then, like, the kill will be in close up, so you know that he's not actually there in the room ever. Basically, he commissioned these porn stars, I think, to film these shots themselves, and then he just edited and shot around them. And that sounds fucking weird, right? Like, you couldn't find enough women that you knew to just be in the same room with this killer robot? That would be the more sensible thing. But given how many times he needs to kill somebody in the movie, well, he doesn't. They do it too much. He could have cut back on the kills and added more plot and more dialogue and more character, but given the design of the film as he was making it, yeah, you would need a lot of female actresses, and this, I guess, is a way to go. The weird thing about it is there's a movie called Final Flesh, and I'm never going to do it on the podcast because I actually already recorded a podcast about it on my other podcast, The Dirty Sons of Pitches. We did a What the Hell Did We Just Watch episode where we watched Final Flesh, and it was a movie. It was created, produced, directed, written by I think one or more of the people behind Wunderschosen, which, if you never saw it, it was an MTV2 show that was like a parody of Sesame Street, but it was just really dark and fucked up, and puppets, coincidentally. But anyway, what he did was, he contacted, I think it was 4 different amateur porn studios, or rather independent porn studios. Like, not big studios, they were like online companies, or sometimes just, you know, people that specialized in custom pornos, where you can send them a script or a concept or whatever, and they would do it for you. And for most people, that's like a sexual fantasy, you know, they whatever it is, and they'll read your lines and do what you want to do so you can masturbate to them. But he wrote an actual story, or it's a very absurdist sort of thing. It's like apocalyptic and epic, and just very a lot of crazy dialogue and weird shit. It's like David Lynchian sort of. But he just sent like a 4-part script, 1 part to each of these groups, just to see what they would do with it. And it's sort of a weird, I was going to say triptych, but that's 3. I don't know what the quad version of triptych is. Maybe quad-tick? I don't know. But anyway, the result, Final Flesh, is just this really oddball experimental film that I think is very much worth the watch. I would recommend you check it out. But I feel like what they did for an experiment, Clive Cohen did just based on practical realities of needing actresses and not having them. He just hired these porn stars to do essentially non-porn custom videos and said, hey, could you film this where you look at the camera and you do something, some bullshit, and then you look at the camera and scream? And then that's what they did. And that's fucking fascinating to me. There's no, other than Final Flesh, which again did this deliberately and with purpose, there is no movie like this. And that alone would be crazy. And then you get to the fact that between all of these scenes, it's fucking crazy puppet robots in a neo-noir thriller, like with Seven and weird religious imagery and demons and a bunch of fucking weird-ass shit that's even weirder than the shit in between. I'm worried I'm gonna outdo the term weird. I already kind of do. I say weird and interesting a lot. But this movie, that's the best word to describe it. And I don't mean it pejoratively. I don't always mean it as a compliment either, but most of the time I do. This movie is like driving by a car accident, but it's the Batmobile and the DeLorean from Back to the Future have rear-ended each other, and fucking Doc Brown and Robin are like hanging out the side, fucking bleeding to death. So it's like, it's horrifying, but it's also amazing. You know, just the way they do the stuff that isn't the porn stars, the puppets, the robot puppets. One, they all look great. I'm gonna say that unequivocally. And when I say that, you're going to probably look them up and you're going to go, no, they don't. They look great artistically speaking. They don't look great in terms of verisimilitude. They don't look like actual robots. They're not going to make you believe that this is a world where robots are real. And they may even, if you're going into it with that expectation, if you're trying to apply any sense of realism to this movie, then you're going to make fun of it. You're going to go, well, that's not realistic. But I could say the same for David Lynch movies, and a lot of people love those. This movie felt like David Lynch for me, because I'm not a huge David Lynch fan. I'm not a huge fan of absurdism, but this is like that, but you replace the impulse to be weird for the sake of weird with the impulse to be just motherfucking metal. And I say metal in the heavy metal sense, not just the fact that it's a bunch of robots. But they're robots, and it's like I said, a gritty robot cop drama, and there's like these intense close-ups, which you very quickly realize are the entire movie. Like, it's basically close-ups, quick cuts, establishing shots of buildings, and then nudity, and then kill, and then back to the cop with very intense close-ups. And the intense close-ups are there to hide the fact that the robot puppets aren't really complete, necessarily. Like, because they're not... I think a better way to go about it, and I think some shots were this, and I think it's a mix of the two, would have been to have a person with a fake head. But it's most of the time, I think it's like mannequin bodies with clothes on and then the fake robot head. And it's really only like the mouth and sometimes maybe the eyes or like the eyebrow will move. But it's very limited movement. And the hands are always a real person's hand inside like a metal like robot glove. And so sometimes like you'll have a robot standing there just very stationary. But then a human hand will come up in the foreground indicating that he's holding something or using something or typing on something. And it's very obvious that it's not connected to the body. And so they have to do these close-ups to sort of hide the chintziness of it. And it doesn't work. I mean, or rather, it doesn't work to do what it's designed to do, to hide the chintziness. But it works as just a visual quirk of the film. It makes it look very interesting. It makes it look very fun. You know, and it's sort of like, you know, Battlefield Earth, when they do all the Dutch angles, and you watch it, and you go like, oh, really? That's all you need to know how to do to make a scene look off-kilter, is to literally make it off-kilter? It's kind of like that, but it worked for me. And part of it worked because it was kind of goofy, but it put me in a particular headspace that I needed to be in to enjoy the rest of the film, which, to call it goofy sounds like I'm being denigrating, but it's so fucking off-the-wall insane. I think I mention the demons? I mean, he's a religious-themed serial killer, and there are actual demons in the movie. There's, like, visions of hell, and he's hallucinating these... Well, maybe he's hallucinating, or maybe the demons are actually impressing upon reality. It's never made quite clear. I've kind of fallen side of the latter, actually, that the demons are real. And I'll get to... There's one particular vision of hell that's like an extended sequence, and I'll get to that later. It's the craziest fucking thing in an already crazy movie. But just there are so many things that I loved in this movie, and I'll say right now most of them are executed in a way that I would call flawed, that I would call... I mean, I don't want to say poorly executed, because typically that suggests a fundamental lack of understanding of the tenets of filmmaking, the sort of bare minimum things you need to know to make movies. And I feel like he probably does know those things, but because of the nature of the story he's trying to tell and the aesthetic he's trying to apply to it, he's experimenting in ways that often don't quite work out, or at least don't conform to what your normal expectations would be going into any movie, what any movie should be like. This is not like that. Which isn't to say that there aren't things about the movie that I would consider to be failures, just in basic storytelling, more the essential stuff there, but as a visual piece, as an executed art form, as a work of art, I feel like it's more on the side of experimentation that you have to kind of give him credit for, whether or not it worked for you or not. I feel like I'm being more vague and cagey than usual, and I apologize for that, but it's just the nature of this movie is such that it's hard to describe, and I'm just doing my best here. But like I said, just so many cool ideas. Like, like I said, it's a cop thriller. The psychiatrist character presents ideas of, you know, are these people programmed? They're robots, obviously. Or do they have minds of their own? Are they sentient? And, you know, what is it to say that a robot has gone insane? Because obviously, are they designed to be insane? Was this robot built for this? Or is it a mutation? And if it's a mutation, does it mean they're evolving? Just stuff like that. The movie deals with it, but it also doesn't deal with it. That's the other problem, is so much of this is potential interesting, like, plot threads that are almost never fully realized. If I have one major criticism of the movie that is emphatically a criticism, is that the movie has this incredibly repetitive structure to it, where, like, and I think I hinted at that, it's, you have the investigation, well, you have the guy kills a lady, you have the porn scene, and then you have the investigation where either they're the cop and the psychiatrist are finding the aftermath of the kill, or they're in the office kind of talking about either what to do next, or like some kind of philosophy that came up from what they just saw. And when I say that, I don't want to give the movie too much credit on that score, because the actual stated ideas, like the dialogue in this movie, isn't necessarily as deep or as meaningful as I think it wants to be, or is at least presenting itself to be. And a lot of it is just flat out bad. That the way the characters speak, or at least the main character for the most part, but a lot of the characters, they speak in this very sort of gruff tone that I think it I get where he was going with it. I think it works for that kind of gritty noir feel, but sometimes he sounds like a parody of like Freddy Krueger. Like if you ever saw the Rick and Morty episode with, I can't remember the name of the character, but he was like the Freddy Krueger knockoff, and every line would end with bitch. Like that's the main character. He's like, yeah, I'm hunting you down, bitch. Oh, I'm gonna find you, bitch. And it's like, it's just, it wears very thin very quickly. And that repetitive structure, it's, I mean, to say that it has a repetitive structure, a lot of movies can have that and still work. This, it's maddening. And it feels like it didn't have to be that way. A lot of the things that you're going to watch and you're going to consider obvious problems with the movie, I forgive, because I feel like for a movie like this on this budget, trying to experiment as crazily as this movie is, I'm like, okay, well, you know, you cut corners there, or you didn't do this here because you probably just couldn't afford to do what another movie might have done. But a lot of the structural sort of story problems, dialogue problems, character work problems, and like I said, that repetition, I feel like that was just the script. That you could have done more with that, and you didn't. And that bothers me, and it hampers my enjoyment of the film. But again, I'm not, you gotta see this movie. You gotta see Exterminator City. I can't stress that enough, how much you will never see anything like this movie, and you need to fucking see it just on that score alone. You know, there's a fucking sword fight between two robots, and as a function of the narrative, it has no relevance whatsoever. And they state that in the scene. They're like, why are we fighting with swords? It's like, I don't know, helps me think. I'm investigating a robot serial killer who I think worships a robot religion and kills at the behest of a demon with a Hitler mustache that thinks he's the Antichrist. And, you know, the only way I can sort this out is to fight another robot with a sword. And the way they fight is like, it's like something out of, like, Pee-wee's Playhouse. Like, they go, like, this really fast-motion sword fight. It reminds me of, like Muppets when they get excited or agitated, like when Kermit the Frog like flails his arms about. Like that's how all the actions of the robots are, like they're fighting with swords, or when they're typing in computers. There's like a hacking sequence at one point. And again, this sounds like I'm criticizing the movie, and I'm not. It made me laugh, and I'm laughing probably for reasons that the movie wasn't intending for me to laugh at, and usually I would consider that a failure, because I'm not, like I said, I'm not one of those guys who's like, I'm so bad it's good guy. I'm not into recontextualizing a movie and enjoying it for reasons other than what it intended me to enjoy it for. I feel like authorial intent is very important to judging whether a movie is good or bad, whether it accomplished what it set out to do. And I feel hypocritical here, because I'm enjoying this movie for a lot of things that I'm guessing the and it is an author, it is one guy, wanted me to feel and think. But I enjoyed it so much that I can't help that. This fucking vision of hell that he has. Well, he doesn't actually have it. And that's another interesting story thread that they don't really carry over with. A little bit in the very end, which I'll get to when I pitch my ideas later on. But at one point, the psychiatrist says, well, you can see into the killer's mind because we're robots. I can download his memories and his thought patterns into your brain. And I thought, like, that's an interesting plot twist. You know, the cop is going to have the killer in his head, and he's going to have to struggle with that as he hunts him down. But there are no interesting plot twists in this movie. Or rather, there are plot twists, and then none of them really have any bearing on the story. It's just, it's fairly, well, I would say it's fairly rote in terms of the structure of a cop hunting a killer and how it kind of all goes down. Nothing about this movie is rote. Even if it seems familiar to you, it's not. But anyway, he gets the stuff downloaded into his brain, and you get this extended sequence of a hallucination of hell, and it's, in a movie as bonkers as this, this is the most bonkers it could ever bonker. There's an upside-down crucifixion with a demon on the cross, and then the robot is lying on a table, and another demon climbs on top of him and starts fucking him, and then another demon has a baby that then starts eating the demon, and it's just, it's fucking insane. And that's where the Hitler mustache demon comes in, I think, or maybe that was shortly after that, one of his other hallucinations. And then there are other hallucinations where, like, he has a boar head on his wall, and it starts talking to him, and later, like, there's some squishy stuff, like he kills a dog, and I think they imply that he kills a baby off-screen. It was kind of going really fast. A lot of the movie goes really fast. Like I said, the editing is very frenetic. It's a lot of close-up shots, and then, like, cutaways to buildings. Every other scene is a cutaway to a building, and it's done, obviously, deliberately, again, to hide the chintziness of the movie. Doesn't work for that, but it does put you in a weird headspace. And that's, this entire movie is about putting you in a weird headspace. And normally, I would say it's stylish for the sake of stylish, or it's weird for the sake of weird, or it's atmosphere and tone and not story and narrative and character. And all of that is absolutely true. On a larger structural level, this isn't a movie that I should like, but it was so bold and so individual and original and independent that I just have to give it to it. You know, I've been talking lately on Facebook. I threw out a thing in this group I'm involved with about just my beliefs in the purity of art, or the distinction between art and commerce, and where I believe that if there is ever any sort of compromise to market potential or profit, if you ever alter your artistic vision in order to make more money potentially, if you go, well, I'm going to change the story element because I don't think the movie will be marketable if it's there, but I want it there, but, you know, I want to make money. If you ever do that, if you ever include that consideration into your work, then it ceases to be art, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I think commercial art is an oxymoron. I think art needs a level of purity. It needs an authentic artistic vision. I think after it's done, after you make that work of art, if you want to sell it, if people like it, that's fine. I'm not saying you shouldn't make money on that. And I'm not saying if you're working on somebody else's vision, if you're, you know, on a film set and you're the lighting guy, you shouldn't get paid for your work because it's art and you should be doing it for the love of it. But I think the creative voice behind it, the primary creative visionary, he needs to be doing it for its own sake. I believe art is creation for its own sake. And this movie is the purest art that I've ever seen in a movie, maybe. There was no consideration for marketability or what other people might think of it, or you know, whether or not he's going to make a profit. If he made a profit on this, I'd be... Even as low as the budget was on this movie, if he made a profit on this, I'd be amazed. But he did not compromise his vision at all while making this movie, and I have more respect for that than anything. So yeah, the fact that it's maybe not the movie I would make, or typically the movie I would like, that alone, and how obvious that is in every frame of the movie, that goes a long way for me. And that's, I think that's where I ultimately say that despite all of its flaws, and I'll say it, there are many, at least, again, based on my conception of what movies mostly are, this has a lot of them, but what tips it over the scale into great for me is it is just fiercely original, and it dares you to have any kind of reaction. It doesn't expect anything from you. It doesn't try to make you feel any one way. I mean, yes, there are a lot of things in the movie that are just shocking for the sake of shocking. I'll say that, and that's something that always kind of leaves me, like I talked about the dog and the baby, but it didn't feel... Well, I was going to say it didn't feel exploitative. It definitely feels exploitative. It feels like an exploitation movie in a lot of ways. But it didn't feel crass. It didn't feel, you know, disingenuous. And for a movie where roughly half of it is just porn stars getting naked and screaming, you know, that's saying something, I think, that I came away with it not feeling dirty. Or rather, not feeling dirty in a way that the movie didn't want me to feel dirty. You know, that's an accomplishment in itself. And like I said, you're probably not going to like this movie. Or if you do, it's probably because you're going to make fun of it and look at all the flaws and the so bad it's good shit. But you should see it. You should definitely fucking find this movie and see it. There is nothing else like it. And that, even if I didn't like anything else about the movie, there's nothing else like this movie, and that's enough. But there is more stuff that I liked about the movie. There's a lot of stuff I hated about the movie. But you should see it. People who reject movies like this completely out of hand, and I don't normally do this, but I actually looked at a lot of the reviews like around the internet. Well, I say a lot. There actually weren't that many, but they were almost all just completely dismissive. They were like, this is the worst thing ever. Look at the bad dialogue. Look at this or that, or the cheapness of the sets or whatever. There was one that just was very noxious that I actually saw the guy, Clive Cohen, the creator, like responded to, because apparently there was a version of it where he suggested the director burn an orphanage or something. I can't remember exactly, but he had a request, like, could you please take that out? That is a really bad insinuation. And it is. It's fucked up. I mean, I obviously didn't see the original version of the article, so I can't speak to that. But yeah, just all the reviews I read for this were like, don't watch it. It's crap for all these reasons. And it's like, I can't argue with any of those reasons, but I'm saying see it anyway. I'm saying I got a lot of enjoyment out of this movie. this is the kind of movie where, like I know it's never going to happen, but, like, I want to interview Clive Cohen. I want to interview the guy who made this and just pick through his brain and just talk to him about, like, why'd you do this? What was this choice made for? What were the practical realities of trying to make a movie like this? What was your original vision, and how was that compromised just by your lack of budget and all the various other things that went into this? I want to know all of this. I want to figure out where this came from and how this happened and why he never did anything else. I mean, I can guess it's just because, you know, making a movie this independent and this individual and trying to get budgets and stuff for that is very daunting. So I imagine he just could never pull it off again. But this is a vision that I wish there was more of. And I want every movie I watch for this podcast to be like this, you know, regardless of objective quality or subjective quality in that sense. But, Exterminator City, fucking watch it. That's all I'm saying. And so I'm gonna pause the podcast here, as I do every week. I'm gonna come back with my 10-point plan for how to turn Exterminator City into a multimedia franchise cinematic universe. So look forward to that.
Good. Wasting that creep. From their carnage will arise a salvation. Yeah, haven't you figured it out yet? Don't you know who you are? You are the new Messiah, the Antichrist. Don't be so hard on yourself. We all have a cross to bear. On guard. What do you hope to accomplish by this? Kind of takes the edge off, huh? While we wait for him to carve up another victim. You happy now? Like your mama.
And I'm back, and I've got my 10-point plan for how to turn Exterminator City from 2005, directed by Clive Cohen, into a multimedia franchise. And, you know, I really like my batch here, and as much as I talked about in my review how this movie set up a lot of interesting ideas but never really paid them off, and that kind of hampered my enjoyment of the film, paradoxically, I feel like that's probably a very good thing for this part of the podcast, where I have to pitch out the cinematic universe, because all that potential is now mine to kind of shape into interesting ideas for sequels and prequels and things. So, I don't know, it's kind of a double-edged sword for me, I guess. But anyway, this is the part of the podcast where I pitch these out, and I have to start this every week by saying spoilers abound from this point on. If there's anything about the movie that I didn't already spoil in the review, I'm going to spoil it now, because in order to pitch out sequels and prequels and things, I need to talk about the ending and various other plot threads. I feel like this is a movie that's, like, impossible to spoil. If I just gave you a beat-by-beat explanation of everything that happened, I'd still recommend you see it. I'd still think you'd get something out of it. But that being said, spoilers, if you're concerned, stop the podcast now. Go watch the movie, as I recommend you do, and then come back, and we can all enjoy my cinematic universe together. So there's that. Also, if you want to email the podcast, please do so at headcanonpodcast@gmail.com. That's headcanonpodcast@gmail.com. with comments, requests, insults, and most importantly, requests. If you want me to review a specific film and then break out the multimedia franchise for that film, I will happily do so. My stipulations are, as always, I have to be able to find it, I have to be able to afford it, so if it's like really rare and expensive, I might not be able to do it, and also, I'm not going to do like a snuff film. I mean, this movie was like kind of on the edge of that just with all the fucking porn scenes in it. And I say porn scenes, they're naked, it's not like there's insertion or anything, But then again, I love the movie, so, you know, what can I say? Maybe that standard is too limiting. But that's what I say. Otherwise, if it fits that standard, please send it to me. I'll review it, and I'll pitch it out for you. So there's that. And as always, every week, I start with the sequel. And for the sequel, again, I kind of have to spoil the ending a little bit, but I think I might have hinted at it a little bit anyway. And that's, you know, I talked about when the doctor installs the memories of the robot killer into the robot detective, and I didn't take down their names. They all have, like, I think very sort of mundane names, but I didn't write any of them down, so I'm just saying Detective Bot, Psychiatry Bot, and Killer Bot. So anyway, Detective Bot gets the Killer Bot's memories in his head, and he has this weird fucking vision of hell, and then at the end of the movie, they catch the killer, they kill him. Well, I think he dies in prison, or it's, like, you know, it's all very vague. Mostly because, like I said, the visuals are all very quickly done, so it's not always conveying what's happening properly. But anyway, the killer dies and goes to hell, and he meets the devil, and it's, I would say, almost a deliberate reference to, I don't know this for sure, but the old cartoons, like the Warner Brothers cartoons, where somebody would die, he'd go to hell and meet the devil, and it's like, hey, I'm the devil, and I'm here to welcome you to hell, and it's like very sort of cheesy like that, but in a fun way. The devil's literally just sitting there and going like, hey, welcome to hell, but he talks to the killer, and he says, you did so well as a killer, you can get reincarnated on Earth, and you can come back as whatever you want, so what do you want to be? And he decides that he wants to come back as a demon and then possess the cop. So the last scene is the detective continues the murder spree, and then the very last scene is he shoots himself in the head. And he's like, I don't want to go out this way. And like I said, the demonic stuff, you can question whether or not it's real, or how much of it is real, how much of it is hallucination. And I'm saying it's both, essentially. But the part where he shoots himself is a hallucination. It's a vision that he gives himself. That's sort of like his real self trying to tell him what he needs to do, but he's possessed by a demon, so he has very limited control over his body. So the idea is the detective bot is possessed by the demonic form of the killer, but he doesn't necessarily realize it, and I think even then you can kind of question, is it a demon? Is it demonic possession? Are demons real? Or is it just the after effect of the downloaded memories of the killer's, you know, visions in his head? You know, is it like a virus spreading through his system and making him into a killer? But either way, you have that sort of Nietzschean thing, you know, you stare into the abyss long enough, it stares back into you, you fight monsters long enough, you become a monster, and so that's sort of what he's dealing with throughout the sequel, and you can kind of play around with it where maybe you don't reveal the possession right away, maybe you think the killer's somehow back from the dead, and how is this? Is this a supernatural thing? He seemed to worship demons, maybe he came back from hell, and the detective comes back to hunt him again, but then you find out, like, halfway through, that it's sort of like a Tyler Durden thing, where it's all in his head, and he's been the killer the whole time, but is he the killer, or is it a demon possessing his body? So you can kind of play around with all of that in the context of a sort of revenge story. You know, and then I think you build on that question of supernatural versus sci-fi, or whatever you want to call it, in the prequel, where I'm saying you tell the original story of him hunting the killer for the first time, and the way that all went down, you get a brief flashback in the very beginning of the movie about that, where it's basically just him challenging the guy. I think he pulls a knife or grabs the knife, and they fight, and then he sends the guy to prison, and then or I guess it's either prison or an asylum, but he escapes, the killer escapes, and then starts his killing spree anew. So the idea is that you would go deeper into how that all went down, sort of like, I was going to say Red Dragon, but that's only an extended flashback too, but I'm saying, like, that whole story, you know, and the detective robot, he has a human partner, and because this is Exterminator City, all humans in this universe are giant boobed porn star ladies, so I'm saying it's like, I don't know, I guess it would have to be a porn star that wasn't in the original, well, I guess it'd be like Nikki Benz or somebody, like a new age porn star. Actually, I don't know, she's been around for a while. But anyway, so he's got a female partner And the reason you don't see her in the original movie is because she's murdered, and that sort of puts him over the edge. That's what pushes him out to actually want to kill the killer, and he almost does, but of course he takes him to jail. But here you can also explore sort of the religious aspect of it, as you explore, you know, how the Exterminator got the way he did, because it implies the reason he's called the Exterminator is because he literally was an Exterminator robot, which I read that in the description. I don't remember when they said that in the movie itself. But they have a conversation where they're like, well, is it a virus? Is he malfunctioning? Oh, but they went over him when they arrested him the first time and he was clean. So that's where, like, was he designed that way? Or was it, like, some kind of digital evolution? And the idea is he's influenced by his religion, and they establish in the movie there's a robot religion, a religion for robots. They find a robotic priest. He goes to confession. And the robotic religion is not implied to be evil or necessarily, like, influencing him to be evil. But clearly it's implied that the exposure to religion is kind of what set the character off. So I think you go into just more detail on that. And so I'm saying you have this robot religion, and the whole idea behind the robot religion, maybe humans even belong to it too. Maybe humans that are like sort of into transhumanism, into becoming more cybernetic and ultimately fully robotic at some point. Like, that's their ideal, and that's sort of like when you accept Christ into your heart, they're accepting the digital Christ into their heart every time they replace one of their body parts with a robotic one. And maybe they're considered like pariahs on the outskirts of society or something. But the full-blooded robots, or full steel robots that adhere to this robotic religion, the idea behind it is that they're trying to prove that robots have souls. And part of that is through piety, that if they adhere to what is essentially a Christian ethic, or the robotic equivalent of it, they can prove that they have souls by being good people or good robots. And if you want to, like, say the metaphor for the soul is the flame, they're fanning the flames of their pious, positive souls. But the flip side of that is they can also prove that the soul exists by corrupting it, by having a robot that's so evil that they can go to hell, that they're damned. And so they want to prove this by sort of engineering a being like that, a sort of avatar for both the ultimate goodness of robots and the ultimate evil of robots. And I don't know if maybe you introduce the good one as the, or what they believe to be the good one, as the engineer of this conspiracy, as like the high priest of this church. You see that, like I said, the priest that's in this one particular version of the church, or one diocese or whatever, but I'm saying this is like the Pope of the robot church believes he's the positive experiment, the goodliest of good robot religious people. But the Exterminator is explicitly designed and influenced by this church to be the evil example, so that they can both prove it, but from both ends. So that would be sort of the conspiracy behind it. And of course the Pope gets killed. You don't see the Pope in the original movie, so I'm saying he gets killed at the end as well. And then that's the story. And then it ends with, you know, Detective Bot arresting the killer and setting up the original film. So anyway, that's my prequel, and that gets me to spinoff. And for the spinoff, I'm going back to that robotic psychiatrist, and the basic idea would be, maybe call it like Exterminator City : Asylum, and it's this character as sort of like a robotic version of Hugo Strange, the Batman villain. And if you don't know Hugo Strange, he's the chief psychiatrist at Arkham Asylum, which never seems to cure any of their crazy villains. And the reason for that is Hugo Strange doesn't really have much interest in curing them. He wants to explore the psychology of evil and of insanity. And so he's more obsessed with them. They're so obsessed with them that he wants to keep them the way they are, or even make them more insane. And so that's sort of the idea behind the psychiatrist. He is a legitimately sort of creepy character, and the movie kind of hints at this throughout, but it just never kind of gets there. It's, again, it's one of those things that it sets up something interesting or potentially interesting, but then doesn't pay it off, where, like, maybe the reason the killer is the way he is partly because of the psychiatrist's help. He sees the idea that of an insane robot as a function of robotic evolution, or AI evolution. It's mutation, and evolution cannot exist without mutation. So if a robot can go insane, or an AI can go insane without any sort of defect or virus or anything like that, and it's not designed to be that way, then that's an indication of a degree of self-awareness where you're able to transcend your programming, just like a human being can transcend his instinct. You know, we have these, like, fight-or-flight instincts, but the thing that makes us human, the thing that makes us sentient, is we can defy them. We can self-sacrifice, for example, which an animal shouldn't be able to do, or at least an animal in the throes of fight or flight. And the idea is the AI is the same way. You're proving the sentience through its ability to act contrary to its programming by being insane. So that's what the psychiatrist is trying to do, and he's doing it with all the people in the asylum all the time. And so this is that story of him sort of exploring this experiment and the often horrible consequences of it as people escape or kill other people or just, you know, they explore it in very destructive ways. So that would be the idea for the spinoff. I don't really know what the story would be. I mean, because to have just another one escape, maybe there's like a whole prison escapes, like the entire asylum escapes and it's hunting them all down or something like that. Or maybe like the entire AI for like the whole city goes insane and he's brought in to interrogate it and figure out what went wrong and maybe cure it. But of course he has the ulterior motive of trying to figure out the nature of robotic insanity. So, you know, you kind of go through it that way. I don't know exactly what, maybe you can tell both of those stories and they intertwine. I don't really know. I don't really care. But that's the basic idea for my spinoff. And that gets me to crossover. And for crossover, you know, with these, I try to come up with any more, like worlds that are similar enough to the world of the movie I'm talking about to where they seem like they could have fit in the same world all along. And this seemed fairly simple. I've done a couple of other, like, robot things before. I think I pitched Chappie for one crossover. This, I'm thinking iRobot, specifically the mid-2000s Will Smith film, which is nothing like the original short story iRobot. But it's basically a cop movie where a guy who's very skeptical of technology sees a world where robotic assistants are everywhere and he doesn't trust them, and one of them murders its creator, who happens to be the guy who created all the robots, and it's about the conspiracy of why it happened, how it happened, because the laws that govern robots are supposed to be such that he shouldn't have been able to kill the person, but he did, and then there's like a convenient kind of convoluted explanation for how he bypassed the rules, and there's like a larger sort of thing around it. If you haven't seen iRobot, that movie from, what is it, 2004, 2005? But anyway, I'm saying it's the future sequel of that world, of the iRobot world, where Will Smith, and I'm saying you make this today, so he's older, he's now the chief of police, and, you know, of course, at the end of that movie, he partnered up with the Alan Tudyk robot, and they came to an understanding, they trust each other now. Will Smith trusts machines, even though he just fought off an army of evil machines that were taken control of by this AI evil intelligence. But anyway, at the end of that movie, all of the robot servants basically gained, I don't think say they gained sentience, but they got a certain degree of freedom. They were no longer serving humans. They were all living in this one area of town, and the Alan Tudyk robot, the guy that killed his creator, was sort of set up as their leader. Like, he'd be the new mayor of this town, essentially, if they had the same structure. But I'm saying that town is now like a borough of whatever that was, New York City, I don't know. But that's Robot Town, essentially. And there are some humans that still live there or have moved there, but it's all governed by robots. So the idea is the events of iRobot set up the world of Exterminator City. It's sort of like a prequel to that. And now, like, the robots are building themselves, so that's why they look much different and they all have various appearances. That's something I didn't bring up in my review. The robots, not only do they look kind of cool in a weird puppet way, but they're, for the most part, they're all different. There's one weird example where they have a character who isn't the killer but looks just like them. But other than that, I don't know why I think they reuse the same head, but they just put a different, like, helmet kind of thing on him. But for the most part, they look very different. They all look a little different, and that I think makes it work a lot better. But anyway, the reason for that, the explanation in universe now, is they've started building themselves and rebuilding themselves, but without an eye towards function anymore, because they're not building themselves to serve people. They're building themselves because they're sentient life forms who want to, you know, they want to have children, essentially, so they build them from scratch and from scrap. And so that's what Exterminator City ultimately develops as. And Will Smith is like an old chief of police. And the story starts, he has to come back to, I don't know if you call it Exterminator City, I guess it's not because that makes no sense, but whatever, Robot Town, whatever you call it, he goes there because there's a rash of, like, the few humans that do live there are starting to get killed, or maybe it's the robots that are getting killed, maybe that's it, maybe there's like a hacker who's hacking into robots and turning them evil and making them kill each other, maybe it's like an anti-robot, like, racist group or something that wants to, you know, sow division between robots and humans in the place where they're living together, and Will Smith has to, I was going to say come out of retirement, but no, he's the chief of police, and he has to sort of take initiative, take charge of this new investigation, And Detective Bot is like a rookie now. This is, a far prequel from the original Exterminator City. He's fresh onto the force, and he's not all haggard and shit like he is in the original movie. And they have to work together to find this hacker, sort of like Ghost in the Shell, the original anime, where it's like, you know, everybody has the ability to be hacked because of the shit in their brains. In this case, they're robots, so they have the ability to be hacked. And they mention, you know, viruses and shit, so I assume that exists in this world. And so there's just this fringe anarchist that is turning people or robotic people into monsters. Anyway, that's my crossover, and that gets me to Gritty Reboot, which is where I pitch, well, if this is going to be remade today, who would I have direct it? Who would I have cast in it? Who would I have write it, if that's applicable? Most of the time it isn't. But this time I think I did write something down for that. But anyway, for my reboot, my Gritty Reboot of Exterminator City, I would say, and this is maybe a little weird, but my immediate thought, and it's the one I'm going with, Brian Henson. And if you don't recognize that name, you probably recognize the last name. He's the son of Jim Henson, and he's the guy who took over for Jim Henson after he died and has been running the Muppets and the Jim Henson workshop since then. And if you just watched recently, a movie called Happy Time Murders came out, and it wasn't the first one, but it was one of the first sort of well-known examples of their, I can't remember, it's the new imprint they have, it's for adult stuff, and I think it's been around for a while under different names. I think Farscape was actually done under this, where it's when Jim Henson wants to do something that isn't for kids, they have this sort of separate imprint of film and television that they use, and I'm saying that the remake of Exterminator City would be produced under that imprint and directed by Brian Henson. And for the writer, I'm saying Terry Black. That's another name you might not recognize the first name, but you might recognize the second one, because he's the brother of Shane Black, who just did the Predator movie, which was a piece of shit. But Terry Black, he's only written, I think, one other movie. He's written some TV shows. Maybe he did another movie, but the one I'm particularly thinking of is one of my favorite 80s movies. It's called Dead Heat with Treat Williams and Joe Piscopo, and it's cops versus zombies, and it's a fucking underrated movie. I'm never going to watch it for this podcast, because once again, I already recorded a podcast for my other podcast, Saturday Night Jive, where we talked about how great Dead Heat was, and Terry Black, he never did anything else, and I want him to come out of retirement and write the badass remake of Exterminator City, directed by Brian Henson. And for the acting, I'm saying, again, the voices, I'm pretty sure Clive Cohen just did them all. I'm assuming that because I didn't see anybody credited for the voices in the IMDb. All the credits are just the porn stars. But anyway, for the voice of the lead, I'm saying Alec Baldwin doing his sort of, like, almost like a parody of a gravelly sort of, like the voice he does for, like I was going to say The Shadow, but I think he was doing that pretty straight. But, like, he has kind of like an over-the-top, you know, gritty detective voice that I think would work for this. And for the voice of the psychiatrist, I'm saying Michael Emerson from Lost. He was, I was going to say Henry Gale on Lost. That was the fake name he used for like a couple episodes. Benjamin Linus is the character that he actually played on Lost. And, yeah, he's very, very creepy and very, so like, he also went on to Person of Interest. If you never watched Lost, he was I guess if you never watched Lost, you probably didn't see Person of Interest either. But anyway, Michael Emerson, great TV actor. He was also a villain on Arrow a couple seasons ago. But anyway, and for the priest, I would say make him more of a character. He's only in a couple scenes in the movie, but you know, this he'd be more integral to the plot. I'm saying Tobin Bell, who you probably know as the guy who plays Jigsaw in the Saw movies. He's also a notable TV actor. He was on, speaking of Arrow, he was on The Flash a couple seasons ago. He played Dr. Alchemy, and he's got a very grave sort of voice. So I'd say, because again, these are all voices, you would still have puppets. Of course, I'm going to have all the characters be puppets. And, you know, I mean, I didn't recast any of the porn stars, obviously, and I'm not going to, but for the gritty remake, you obviously wouldn't do that. You would have a budget for this, so you'd be able to cast actual actresses, and you wouldn't have that repetitive structure that I'm talking about. You would take one of these ideas that I'm presenting for the sequels and prequels, the stuff that was sort of set up but not paid off, and you would just pay one of them off. You know, maybe it's the detective grappling with the memories of the killer. Maybe it's the religious angle and they're trying to prove the robot's soul. Maybe it's the demons and the what's supernatural versus what's mechanical. Maybe it's the psychiatrist trying to experiment with digital evolution. Just take one of those ideas and make that the main storyline for the reboot. And there you go. That's my gritty reboot for Exterminator City. All right, and that gets me to the back half, which is the five things that aren't necessarily movies, and that starts with the TV series adaptation. And for this, you know, like I said, there's an interesting world hidden inside this repetitive cycle of big booby ladies getting killed, and you tell that story in TV form, and I'm envisioning it as something like a reverse Alien Nation, where it's a city mostly composed of robots, where humans are a strident minority. They're even discriminated against because, you know, those dirty flesh bags of mostly water, as the episode of TNG said. And so I'm saying it's about the first human cop on an all-robot police force who gets teamed up with a bigoted anti-human robot cop, who's the TV version of the detective bot from the movie. And, of course, the first season arc would be hunting the demonically obsessed serial killer. And, again, you can explore the religious stuff. You would explore all of those plot threads as different ones throughout the series. You know, the professor experimenting with the madness and everything. You know, all of those would be arcs threading through the various seasons. You know, and you can have new stuff, too. Like, I was thinking you'd have, like, these Skinners. They're, like, robotic kind of, not, I was going to say cannibals, but they're, like, robotic monster creatures that steal human skin to wear them to be more human. But they're obviously, like, these fucking creepy-ass, like Clive Barker monsters. And, you know, you have maybe even a new line of more humanoid robots. What it is to be a robot is advancing. You know, and you have this new generation that are basically indistinguishable from humans, or maybe they have weird eyes like in the show Humans, but they're basically like Cylons. And so there's a division between the old school robots that clearly look like robots and are proud of it and don't want to be human-like, and they kind of even resent the idea that they're anything like humans. Speaking of Cylons, like, there's that really great speech that the guy gives where he's like, I don't want to be human, I want to smell dark matter and see a supernova and shit. And so, a lot of them are like that, like, just the fact that they're bipedal. Like, they don't need to be bipedal, they can be usiform, they can be anything. But then there's this other generation that's like, no, we want to conform to humanity, we want to be more like humans. But then some of them even maybe want to infiltrate humans, so like Westworld. You know, you have all of those kind of things coming together. And I think for the robot technology, or for the practical effects, and I obviously I'm always going to say practical effects over CGI, you basically do it like Super Marionation, like Jerry Anderson's, like Thunderbirds, or the Terrahawks, or the Captain Scarlet, the Mysterions, that kind of thing, where it's like the puppets, but they're like realistic, but to the point where they're just really nestled in that uncanny valley, which I think a lot of the robots in the original movie have that as well. But I'm saying, I mean, there's a mix of actual humans and puppets, like life-size puppets. So I'm saying it's more like if you ever saw Space Precinct, which was, I think it was only one season, but it was Jerry Anderson's, like, space cop show, sort of like that aesthetic, where the robots are still puppets, or rather they're animatronics, but they're full animatronics that you see, like, obviously you wouldn't be doing the intense close-ups and the quick cuts and stuff in the TV show. You would just have the budget to make them cool-ass robots. So, anyway, that's my pitch for the TV show, and that gets me to the video game. And for the video game, you know, like I said, I've been on kind of a retro kick lately. I don't want to pitch new kind of video games, like 3D games or modern generation style games, when I can do a retro game. And for this, I think the obvious example of a retro game that would work for the plot of Exterminator City, well, maybe it's not as obvious. It's obvious to me, but maybe it's convoluted as an explanation. But I'm saying, like, if you remember those old Sierra-style point-and-click adventure games like Space Quest or Police Quest, or if you want to go more 3D, I wouldn't go farther than the late 90s, like the Tex Murphy games, like Under a Killing Moon, where, you know, it's all about the investigation and finding clues and collecting items and talking to people, and you can have very limited movements. If you know, going back to the Sierra model, you know, you'd have an animation, and maybe only the mouth and the eyes would move, and then you'd have a text box explaining what he's saying. You don't have to have, like, a full-motion video sequence, which is what you got in Under a Killing Moon, but, you know, I'm saying, because the puppets in the original movie have very little movement, you know, having just an image with very little movement for a point-and-click adventure game, you know, you could have established essentially the same tone from the movie in the game, and it'll all kind of fit together. It'll feel more cohesive. So that's what I'm saying. You play Detective Bot, you're investigating the crime, but you're doing it in that sort of old-school point-and-click adventure style. You know, or maybe a mixture of both. Maybe you have the FMV sequences, but then the gameplay is more the point-and-click adventure, so you can have a mix of the old and the, I was going to say new, but not quite so new. Full-motion video is an artifact of the 90s, but I think it's underrated. I think everybody talks about it like it's shit now, but I liked the full-motion video stuff, like Wing Commander and that shit. But that's my video game, and that gets me to the next one, which is merchandising. All the stuff that I would take from this movie to sell out and make a quick buck. And for this, I'm going with, well, you know, you have these robots, and they all look like they're built out of scrap metal, which I like. It looks like, Like, all of them look like, you know, when they built the spaceships for Star Wars, and specifically the miniatures where they would, like, go through, like, do the trench run, and they would just put all those, they're called greebles, where it's just, like, random shit, like satellites and different mechanical bits. It looks like all of these robots are made out of different greebles, basically. And so I'm saying, instead of selling, like, just a toy of the various robot characters, you sell, like, almost like Lego kits, but specifically designed to make, you know, robot heads that you can put on, like, fake mannequin bodies if you want, and you can even have, like, their mouths move and their eyebrows and stuff move. Maybe even, I mean, I don't know how you would incorporate, like, a remote control scheme if you're building them from scrap, but maybe they can do that now. Maybe there's, like, a mount or something, or a skele structure or template that you can put the stuff on, and then it'll move, you know, whatever brow you put on that little rail thing, you can move it up and down, something like that. But, you know, you can make any kind of configuration of robot. You can buy any sort of different eyes or mouths or whatever, and you can make any kind of robot you want, and you can make your own Exterminator City movie with as little a budget as the actual director had. But that's my idea. Sell those in stores, and nobody will buy them because nobody's ever seen this movie. But then also, I'm saying, you know, you have the ready-made formula of paying porn stars for custom videos. I'm saying you start a new service where it's, you know, because obviously those are mostly designed for, you say, hey, could you put your feet in front of the camera and tell me to lick them or something? I don't know. That's my secret fetish I've just revealed. No, I'm kidding. But that's what it is. It's, you know, it's fetishes that you know, and so it's not necessarily story dependent like it is in this movie or Final Flesh. But I'm saying you create a whole new service for story specific custom porn videos where they're not even porn videos. They're videos with porn stars, but giving monologues and shit, or just filming interstitial stuff that you can edit into your own movie. I'm saying you just go with that and have that as a regular service that, again, no one will participate in, because they'll probably just hire an actress to be on set and in the scene, because they'll have a budget, which Exterminator City didn't. But if you don't have a budget, you buy the robot kit to make your own robot heads, and then you go to this service for very cheap, small, custom videos, and then you just go nuts. You make your own Exterminator City movie. I think that works. So that gets me to the part of the podcast everybody loves, the porn parody. And it seems almost redundant to do a porn parody for Exterminator City, considering half of it is kind of porn anyway, but I'm going to do it anyway because I have a name that I'm really proud of. As I say, this is mostly just about porn parody titles. You know, I always thought porn parody titles have lost their luster. Now it's just like, oh, Family Guy, a porn parody, or This Ain't Family Guy. I'm sure there's a Family Guy one, right? I mean, I know there's an American Dad one. I remember seeing that somewhere, like a poster for it online, and it freaked me out because it's like, I think the dad was fucking the daughter, and like in the context of porn, I guess you don't really think of it like that, but it's incest, that shouldn't be a thing. But anyway, the idea is that the porn parodies, they aren't creative anymore. It's not like a Clockwork Orgy or Edward Penis Hands or a third example, because those are the only two I ever come up with on every episode. But I want to bring back the golden age of porn parody titles where they were slightly clever puns. And for this one, like I said, I'm really proud of this. I really like this. I mean, as proud as I can be of a porn parody title. And that's, I mean, because it's also pretty obvious, too. I'm just going to throw that out there, but I'm still proud of it. My porn parody title for Exterminator City is Sex Sperminator Titties. Okay, I'm just going to let that sit for a second. And I'm going to say it again, just for your own edification and mine. Sex Sperminator Titties. Thank you. I assume you're applauding right now. I'm just going to say thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it warms my heart to get the sort of appreciation for that genius that I just presume you're giving to me right now. Sex Sperminator Titties. Oh, can that just be the new title for this podcast? Fuck headcanon. Hey, well, everybody, welcome to the latest episode of Sex Sperminator Titties. All right, that's my porn parody title. And that gets me to the last thing, number 10, and that's the drinking game. And for this, I'm saying every time you see somebody move in fast motion to, like, type on a keyboard or the sword fight, anytime, like, I don't know if maybe it's meant to be, like, oh, they're robots, so they move really fast. I think it's more just a stylistic choice. I don't think it actually has, like, narrative connection. But every time you see that happen, every time you see, like, a real dude's hand inside a metal glove, I say real dude, it's probably Clive Cohen, moving really fast, then you take a drink. Anytime you see outright fucking demons, because, like, you're watching a movie about robots and naked ladies. There shouldn't also be demons, but there are. One of them has a fucking Hitler mustache, as I believe I mentioned. Anytime you see an actual fucking demon come up, you take a drink. And then finally, I was going to say, because you can't say, like, anytime you see a naked lady scream, because it happens so fucking often in the movie that, like, you would die of alcohol poisoning. But I'm saying every time the scream takes just too long. Because that's another thing with, as frenetic as the editing is in, like, the interstitial bits, to hide the chintziness of the robots, the editing of the boob scenes, I shouldn't call them boob scenes, that's reductive, but the editing of those scenes is comparatively lackadaisical. And it's almost to the point where I think a lot of the actresses were giving them, like a long take that they could then cut up, assuming they would cut it up. Like, okay, I'm going to scream, but I'm going to give them a couple different versions of a scream in the same take, because I know they're going to cut this up and, you know, use just the best part of it. But in the movie, it's just one long take of screaming, where they're like, ah, ah, ah. So it's like that. So I'm saying every time you see that, every time the scream just goes a bit too long, where you get the sense that the actress involved didn't think they were going to use the whole thing, then you take a drink. So that's my drinking game. As always, don't try this at home. This is suggested for entertainment purposes only. I don't drink. I don't think you should either, but I'm not going to judge you or tell you how to live your life. So if you want to drink, you can do this and have some fun, but drink responsibly, or at least I recommend that you do, or you don't blame me if you get hurt, if you hurt yourself. So anyway, that's it. That's the drinking game, and that's all my pitches. That's my cinematic universe for Exterminator City. I enjoyed making it. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. And the only other thing I have to do now is tell you what I'm going to do next week. And next week, the random category that I got was animation. There's got to be an animated movie. And the animated movie that I picked at random was Flight of Dragons, which is an old Rankin and Bass cartoon. And this actually breaks my formula a little bit. It's one of those ones where, I mean, I still think it counts, because normally at the beginning of the show I say movies I've never seen. I did see this as a kid, but I haven't seen it in years. I don't remember it. And I kind of want to watch it again to see how it holds up. Usually I reserve those for my choice category, which is every 10 episodes I have one where I don't pick at random. I get to pick a movie deliberately, and I try to pick those ones there. But all of those movies are also on all the other lists that they apply to, so I got this one, Flight of Dragons, at random for animation, and I believe it's also on the fantasy list as well. But that's what I'll be watching next week, Flight of Dragons. I hope you enjoy it, and thank you for listening, everyone. And as Johnny Red always says, walk on water, eat bullets, and shit out ice cream. Goodbye, everybody.